Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Speak Beastie for February 28th, 2016. I'm Shannon Mickelson.
I'm Ariel Taransky.
I'm Aaron Schwartz.
Today's rotating host is Sophie. Sophie, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Sophie. I'm from England and I'm a Hufflepuff and Mugglenet, I'm on the news team.
Yay! Before we get started, we just wanted to let everyone know that we're now on Patreon.com. For just as little as $1 per month, you can become a sponsor of Speak Beastie to help us bring you more from Newt's fantastic world. If you want to help, go visit patreon.com/speakbeastie. And we also have rewards if you choose to donate certain amounts of money. You can have access to our exclusive Facebook group to discuss theories with us, the hosts and rotating hosts, and to make new friends. You can also have an opportunity to decide what we discuss on the Newt case. And now for the Phoenix Register. We recently got some news from the Pottermore correspondent who got to speak with Colleen Atwood, who is, of course, the costume designer. We've mentioned her a few times before on the show. She talked about doing the Flapper-era costumes and how exciting it was for her since there will be no Hogwarts robes in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Colleen Atwood talked about her designs for Tina. She said, Tina had been an Auror. She's fallen out of that world, but I still wanted her to have the feeling of that world. So I gave her an overcoat that's a little bit loose, like an Auror's coat, but made of more ordinary fabric, as though she's downgraded from that spectacular leather silhouette of the Aurors. Right from the start, I saw her in soft, cooler colors and warm grays, those sort of tonalities. And I think that I like that contrast already between Tina being a former Auror, which is not an easy thing to say, and how we were talking, I think it was one of, it was either last episode or the one before, how we were talking about Graves and his ultimate coat.
I think what we've seen so far, it's, I really like how different she looks from her sister.
Yes.
And we've talked before about how it's going to be interesting to see their relationship because they do seem like such different characters. And I like that that even goes right down to how they dress.
Yes.
And I'm clicking through some of the pictures and it's like, she always is kind of wearing the same colors, even if it is technically different clothes.
And I feel that's kind of true to how people are in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know I'll look through my closet and be like, wow, I have way too many of, you know, this one color. So I think that's good. And it's like you said, Shannon, with the nice contrast of Tina and Queenie. And Colleen Atwood talked a bit about Queenie's lighter and more traditionally feminine style. She said, Queenie uses her magic in a different way. She's got a different energy than Tina altogether, and I wanted to dress her in a different way, keeping her light and her colors light, hair-like and rosy and warm and approachable, which I really appreciate that she clarified, given that one of the outfits we saw in the trailer, or not the trailer, it was the behind-the-scenes footage, my apologies. It was the pink, and I was worried that they were trying to do sort of an Umbridge-type pink situation. And luckily it seems that, no, she's got more of a bubbly, lighter personality. And it's just, again, to contrast her relationship with, or not her relationship with Queenie, how they are just, you know, two different people. So.
Mm-hmm.
Not all pink is evil, necessarily.
Yeah, I wear pink, and I think I'm not an evil person, so.
Well, that's what, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Anyway.
Hey, come on.
Yeah, I like the idea of the connection to being an Auror. And I also like the fact that that gives the idea that there is a certain standard Auror look. Whereas in all of the Harry Potter movies and stuff, we have, you know, a couple different Aurors that we see and they're all dressed very differently, which is, it's cool. but, you know, you don't have that uniform feeling, which I was kind of looking for, like an Auror's department in New York. So that it kind of, it's nice to be like, oh, there's a detective look. There's an Auror look that's actually out there.
Yeah.
I like how each character has a very distinctive coat.
Yeah. I feel like that might indicate kind of, we've touched on this before, but the time exactly this is going on, the season, I should say, and that it's very cold and maybe it's a nice brisk winter, and that's why everyone's coats are so important.
I was also looking at the pictures and I noticed that in some of them, Tina's wearing a necklace, and I was wondering if the necklace is significant at all. Because she's not wearing them in all of the images.
Oh, I see what you're talking about. Does it kind of look like a locket?
Yeah.
That's it's what the kind do we of... know about lockets?
Oh.
No.
But I could see that having something to do with, like, their mother or their parents in general.
This is a nice locket. It's not, you know, full of an evil wizard's soul.
I would hope not.
You never know.
Did we know before that she was an Auror? I thought that was quite interesting to learn that. And because I looked at her original character description, it said she'd sort of fallen from grace a bit or something. So it's quite interesting she'd been an Auror. That's not really related to the costumes, but yeah.
No, but you're right, I think. As far as I remember, we just knew she had worked for Macusa. Yeah. But given that it's, you know, the American Ministry of Magic, essentially, it could have been any sort of government job. She could have had, you know, kind of an Arthur Weasley type job for all we knew. So, yeah, I think that kind of is new information.
Yeah, so I guess Auror is an American job, too. I mean, that would make sense.
Yeah, you gotta have cops everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm glad they have that they didn't change the name just because it's American. Mm-hmm. Homage.
We also have in our article a picture from the behind the scenes featurette that was like, I remember this being a very brief shot where she's obviously wearing some sort of fancy dress.
I really love that dress.
Yeah. And so I'm like, but Newt's wearing the same clothes because he doesn't change.
Right.
So I'm like, are they going to a party?
That's probably his version of fancy dress.
Like, yeah, they were like, okay, we're all gonna dress up to go like undercover at this party, and they walked out in dresses and he was wearing the exact same clothes.
Like, he's just so hopelessly clueless, like, I look great, what are you talking about? This is an amazing
or
outfit.
He like bursts into this party for some reason and she's like, like, you look ridiculous, stop embarrassing me. But yeah, I'm excited to see more of that dress. So
yes.
Yeah.
Very fabulous dress.
And she doesn't seem like the kind of character who wears dresses a lot.
Yeah. Well, hold on. Is she wearing a skirt or pants?
I think she's wearing pants. They're just very wide.
Yeah.
Legged.
Okay. No, I'm looking at the other shot and it does seem to be pants.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the second picture or something of Tina. And she's walking with Newt, and she's got her blue coat on, and she's carrying the case, which is interesting. But I love, she's got like her collar popped, like that's so awesome. It looks really businessy. Like, she's got stuff to do, and it's cool.
Even her facial expression, like, she is not in the mood for Newt right now.
She's definitely cooler than him.
If you want to see the pictures in the whole article, just be sure to check out the MuggleNet Fantastic Beasts section. Our next little bit of news, the Pottermore correspondent actually went on set. They said, going undercover as an extra was basically like conducting my very own sneaky study in human nature. The ultimate on-set social experiment. Put 100-odd people in 1920s costume, hair and makeup, confiscate all technology, provide biscuits, leave them in a giant tent for hours at a time, and see what they do. So it makes me really wonder what was happening.
Yeah, what did they do?
That sounds like a dream.
Yeah.
I like the biscuits.
I want to be in that tent.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, biscuits,
1920s costume.
Somebody
want to be there.
Somebody just show us this footage of them mulling around.
Yeah, just the extras.
Yeah.
What do I do without my phone?
That's what I'm interested in seeing.
I'd be fidgety without my phone, but I mean, biscuits and 1920s costumes.
Yeah. Well, biscuits. What else do you need? Those would be cookies, right?
Yeah.
A kind of cookie.
Yeah, they're kind of like the shortbread cookies, I think, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what you're here for, Sophie.
I know, British stuff.
There's so many British things in that just tiny little, like, three-sentence quote.
Yeah, biscuits.
I guess that means the Pottermore correspondent is definitely British.
Or trying to be.
Or I guess they're in England, even though it takes place in America.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's where they're filming, right?
Yeah. Interesting.
In casting news, we have Josh Crowdery. I'm sorry if I'm butchering your name, sir. As Senator Henry Shaw, Sam Redford has been cast as a customs official. And then we got a nice little chunk of other casting. There's Jorge Leon Martinez, who will be a Spaniard ship passenger, and Cornelia Horvath as a South American passenger on Newt's boat. So this suggests that Newt will be traveling to New York by ship. And another casting from the ship, Alfonso Austin, is a boat crewman. So that gives a little bit more detail of the story as well, that we'll actually be seeing Newt travel over to New York.
See him now on the bow of a ship headed for a Loo Land. In New York, you can be a Loo Man. That's how it opens, right?
Yep.
Is that Hamilton?
Yes.
Okay. I figured we were going to get at least one in there.
Yes.
This episode is sponsored by... This whole show was sponsored by Hamilton, and this episode sponsored by Chick-fil-A.
We're secretly a Hamilton show.
Hamilton and Fantastic Beasts.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yes, this is interesting that we will see him on the ship.
I think we had, we've got Senator Henry Shaw, that's Henry Shaw Jr. I think we already had Henry Shaw Sr. at some point. So we've got two Henry Shaws. For Fantastic Beasts. I think I saw that on the Harry Potter wiki. I'm not totally sure. But both are nomadges. So, yeah. We have interesting... Like, this to me looks like some kind of... There's going to be some kind of big something that happens politically in the nomad community, which will affect the wizarding world. Like, you know, Second Salem-er type thing. So it's not going to be a small... deal. It's a, you know, we have a senator involved. Like, okay, so we've got bigger things going on.
Yeah, John Voight is Henry Shaw Sr.
Oh, okay. That's exciting. So it does specifically say he's senior. John Voight is Henry Shaw Sr.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just wanted to be sure because I didn't know if this was maybe they were trying to do a younger version or a flashback or something.
I think maybe when, John Voight was cast, he was just called Henry Shaw, but I think this second guy, they were like, this is Henry Shaw Jr.
Okay. So do we know much about John Voight's character? I don't remember.
Just that he's his dad.
John Voight is his own dad.
my Harry Potter wiki just loaded, finally. In 1926, he was present at a rally for his son's supporters in New York, which was also picketed by members of the New Salem Philanthropic Society. It's coming together. It's all happening.
Yeah. So, we do have some Fantastic Beasts book news. There will be an updated version that will be released on February 9th. 2017, so we have to wait almost a year for it. But the cover will be illustrated by Johnny Duddle. So that should be very exciting. I'm obviously going to buy it.
Johnny Doe? Like John Doe?
No, Johnny Duddle.
Oh, Guddle. I thought you said Doe. I was like, John, no. Someone trolling you.
Conspiracy. Not Guddle, Duddle, with a D.
Duddle.
Like Dudley... Like Dudley without the Y, basically.
So Dudley, but Duddle.
There will also be an illustrated edition of the book, the first in the set of Hogwarts Library books. It will be released in autumn of 2017. The illustrator has not been announced yet, but I can only imagine that they'll be awesome. So I'm looking forward to it a lot. Another book that I'm going to dish out money for, so.
I know.
Yeah.
It'll probably have like an image of every beast.
Maybe that's not a good idea for me. Maybe that's not what I need.
Okay, I'm wondering, with the illustrated edition, are Harry and Ron's comments still going to be in there?
Huh. Well, it did say it would be the first in the set of Hogwarts Library books. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking it would be, since they're doing an updated version next year, maybe that will still have Harry and Ron's comment. And the illustrated version would be like what you'd get from
like the actual real book. Yeah. I wonder if the updated version is going to be updated as in having more beasts. Like that would be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it just an introduction from J.K. Rowling or something? I don't know. But
that's what I read. They said, but I'm hoping for more beasts.
Yeah, it would be nice. Yeah. It would be good.
It would be nice to introduce more beasts, especially since you've got me over here, I don't know, starting a petition for Sasquatch since, like, episode 3, so,
yeah.
I hope that actually, starts happening. We just happen to see someone sends us a message, hey, by the way, we actually started a petition to have Sasquatch in the Fantastic Beasts films. Would you sign it? Yes.
I do need to say something real quick. I don't know if this will make the episode or not, but I do have to give a shout out because earlier today I tweeted just asking for general good luck from the universe, and one of our Speak Beastie followers, his name's Patrick, he replied with a picture of Felix Felicis and said something along the lines of from like me and all other Speak Beastie listeners, and I just thought that was very sweet and thoughtful.
That's so nice.
Yeah, I was touched. So thank you, Patrick. I really, truly appreciate it. And everyone else who listens to Speak Beastie who loves us.
Well, speaking of nice messages, Sophie, why don't you take it away with the owl post?
Yeah, so we got some messages on Tumblr this week. First one's from Tingly Fish, who says, she's a great name. Hey guys, I don't really have any specific questions or information to add. I just wanted to stop by and let you guys know how much I love the podcast. I'm always looking for things to listen to while I draw, and I was so happy when I stumbled upon Speak Beastie. You guys are also passionate about HP and are really entertaining to listen to. Keep up the good work, guys. From Lauren, a Ravenclaw listener. So thank you for that.
Aww, thank you.
Yay, Ravenclaw.
Love it.
We have such Tingly nice
fish.
Listeners.
Tingly Fish.
That's a really, that is a quality username. Like, it's great. No sarcasm, by the way. That made me so happy when Sophie read that out.
I think it's also the accent that really helps. It's
like it's she could nice, read anything and I'd be happy.
Yeah.
I'll read the phone book. Buckbeak is my spirit animal. Sent a message highlighting a couple of really great points. What we talked about last time, and they say, I think Newt would totally have a woven demiguise cloak, and I think he'd probably talk to the demiguise himself to let him shave it. Then he would have gone through the weaving process himself and earned that cloak.
I think that's a really interesting comment, because I can just imagine Newt approaching this demiguise being like, hey buddy, can I shave you? I would really appreciate using, you know, your, what is it, their fur?
Yeah, like their coat.
Yeah. And and then Newt sitting there weaving the coat. All by his lonesome by the fire with his little Niffler friend. I just really
I keep forgetting about his Niffler friend. I'm so excited.
No. Do we have a name on the Niffler?
No.
Oh, boy.
I don't know that Newt would actually weave the cloak himself. I mean, maybe talk to the demiguise, but I would think that maybe he happened to save the demiguise. Like, so there was some situation, and the demiguise goes, oh, well, you know, like, my coat is, like, it's good for invisible stuff. You should do this. He's like, oh, well, thanks, bro. and, you know, and then goes and has it, has the whole thing done. Cause I think he's a little bit too, not airheaded, but like a little too absent-minded to actually premeditate, oh, demiguys, I should go ask him for a coat and then I'll sit here and weave it myself, you know? I think he's more of like fortune happens to him and he's like, oh, thanks, universe and demiguys, bro.
It's like giving him a lock of his hair.
Yeah, exactly.
So romantic. Why was that ever romantic? That's what I want to know.
I don't know.
I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but I'm just saying. It's just, I'm glad we don't do that anymore.
But yeah, I like the point that, oh, he would earn it. So I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
Whether he asks politely or does something.
Yeah.
But Beak is my spirit animal, continues to talk about Newt's wand and says, the lime could refer to the type of wood. It could either be citrus lime wood or the non-citrus lime tree, which is also known as linden wood. Linden has a lot of medicinal uses for colds, respiratory issues, inflammation, and insomnia. It symbolizes harmony and happy futures. Mineral lime used to be for concretes and is still used as a building material. It could symbolize strength and solid things. Shells represent the element of water, intuition, sensitivity, and creativity, which are all things you need to work with animals. You can also perform divination with seashells. You can pick shells that speak to you out of a collection. Then the reader finds patterns and meanings in your shells. Bone represents the earth element, permanence, and among other things, mortality. Generally, though, Newt's wand elements symbolize earth and water. Very Hufflepuff, if you ask me. Healing, creativity, and sensitivity. Which, yeah, some great points. There's a lot in there.
Yeah. Really, really did a lot of research.
Yeah.
I really didn't know what they were mentioning about the lime, that it could either be the citrus lime wood or the non-citrus lime tree, which is linden wood. Because mm-hmm. I'd heard of linden before, but I didn't know that's what it was also called. So I think that's just a lot of good information and research. So thank you very much, Buckbeak is my spirit animal, for all of this, because the way you summed it up at the end, especially with how elements symbolize earth and water, healing, creativity, and sensitivity, which you said was Hufflepuff, and of course Newt's going to be a great embodiment of Hufflepuff, I think. I like how these things have all come together, and you've shown us how they all come together, just what we know so far about his wand. So thank you so much for sending this comment.
Yeah, it's hard to think of anything to add because right? that's it. Like, that's pretty cool.
I like the information that you can also perform divination with seashells.
Yeah.
The mermaid in me is excited.
I wonder if Newt can do divination. I wonder if he's good at divination.
That, you know, I want to see that, because we never really saw anyone in the series who, at least in Harry's experience, who was good mm-hmm. in the class of divination, either with...
And who, like, really practiced it.
Yeah, because we kind of got the sense that, well, it was Harry's perspective mostly, that Trelawney wasn't a very good professor, and that she... Mm-hmm. wasn't good at divination and all that. When she was, it was just, she was so unpredictable in her predictions. So I really would like to see that. I would like to see someone who is good at divination, definitively good at it, because we already understand that he was good at care of magical creatures. So
yeah. So for today's main discussion, we're going to be talking about Eddie Redmayne and how well we think he's going to play Newt Scamander. So for just a little summary of Eddie Redmayne, he is 34 years old. He is most known for The Theory of Everything, Les Mis, most recently The Danish Girl, and My Week with Marilyn. Last year he won the Oscar for Best Actor for The Theory of Everything, and he's nominated again for The Danish Girl. So he has proved that he can act, but will he make a good Newt is the question. So Newt, aka Newton Artemis Fido Scamander, the best slave ever, is 29 years old.
Love it.
And I wrote that he is most known for writing this book that we're always talking about.
It's shocking that the movies you named off I've only seen one of them.
I've only seen one of them.
No, it's My Week with Marilyn.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, but Steven recently, sorry, that's my boyfriend. He recently bought me The Theory of Everything, and so I feel like I can't watch it until he can watch it with me, so that's why I haven't watched it yet. And I want to see The Danish Girl, and I don't think I've just been in the right mindset yet to watch Les Miserables, so I don't know when that's gonna happen.
It's something.
Yeah, that's the only one I've seen is Les Mis. It was interesting, I was on his IMDb. He really hasn't done that much. Like, he has 17 actor credits. And I felt like I would have expected more. But he's been doing stuff for like 10 years.
Yeah.
Just only became famous recently.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what happened with Daniel Radcliffe, too. You know, he was doing mostly commercials and stuff before he became Harry Potter. Granted, he's a lot, you know, younger.
Yeah.
But I do feel like Daniel Radcliffe kind of came out of a little bit more out of nowhere, whereas Eddie has a very recent, he feels like he's kind of trending right now, you know? So,
yeah.
Obviously he would be cast for this part because he's kind of hit it big recently.
Mm-hmm. Like, okay, you can definitely track his rise to fame.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hoping that his being cast is not just as a trend.
Mm-hmm. So a few more things we know about Newt. We know that his mother was a hippogriff breeder. We've talked about that before. He went to Hogwarts from 1908 to 1915, and obviously he's a Hufflepuff. His official character description is an eccentric, globe-hopping English magizoologist wizard who is far more comfortable around beasts and creatures than he is around other people. Comes to New York on a quest with his case full of magical habitats containing rare and endangered species. So I think we can all agree that we pretty much imagine Newt as being a little bit nerdy and awkward. And, you know, this says that he's more comfortable around beasts than around people.
I feel the same, though. Like, put me in a room full of dogs and I'm perfectly fine. Put me in a room full of people and I feel like I can't cope. Like, I just... I don't know. I like that description. Even just with the four movies that you said of Eddie, I know I haven't seen all of them, but they're very obviously different roles in each movie. You don't look at that and think, oh, he's typecast as a certain, I don't know. He definitely likes to, play with the range he's got.
Yeah, he's one of those actors, he kind of really adapts himself to each role. Like, you don't, some actors, you just watch them in playing a role, but he becomes the character that I thought was Stephen Hawking. He kind of became that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the appeal of Eddie Redmayne. And I know Aaron was saying he's kind of trending right now, but I think because people are starting to realize... Hashtag Eddie Redmayne.
It's not that he's bad. Like, he's fine. He's good.
No.
I remember when we first started this, we were talking about a lot of other people who could have been cast and stuff. And it's like, well, so why him and not others? And I hope it's because of his range. I've only seen Theory of Everything and Les Mis, but I'm kind of like writing off Les Mis because it was that production of Les Mis. I have feelings.
okay.
But it's my limited scope of his work is like, can he do all of these things? But yeah.
Yeah, I think it's probably just he's won an Oscar and he's nominated again. I think people are just starting to see his talent. Like, maybe it's not, I wasn't trying to like be mean about you saying he was trending.
No, I
get what you're saying. Like, it seems that way because it does kind of seem like he popped out of nowhere. But I think it was, you know, a casting director was like, hey, this guy's good. Let's see if he's interested in this. And then it went from there. And then it went to auditioning for Fantastic Beasts. And the fact that he'd auditioned before to be a Weasley, I think this is something he obviously very much jumped at the chance. Well, really anyone would, I think, jump at the chance to be in something that's related to Harry Potter, so.
Well, like, for example, you know, Michael Gambon, he he didn't read, or allegedly didn't read, the Harry Potter books when he was being Dumbledore. He was like, this is my character now. Like, I'm taking control of this character, and he just made his own decisions. Whereas, you know, Eddie Redmayne, as a Harry Potter fan, is like, I am fully invested in this world. Mm-hmm. You know, I trust him more, knowing his love for Harry Potter, and therefore trust of J.K. Rowling to do what her vision is. So I'm comforted by that, at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've had a couple pieces of news recently about him. He was doing magizoology research. And then that little funny story where he has a briefcase that he carries around with him. And he just, I guess, to make him feel like he had a real job. And he did not know that Newt had a special case. And he was just carrying this case around with him. But so I think he definitely immerses himself in his roles.
And it also seems like he's having fun with this role. I can imagine how, goodness, but at the same time, you know, bringing your own suitcase, that it almost makes me think of David Tennant when he was becoming the Doctor, how he had the idea for the coat, and he, you know, if you care so much about a character, you have these visions and ideas and what you want. Like, if you're just auditioning for a role, you're just gonna, you know, read the script, do what the director tells you. I mean, I did theater for a bit, so I know, but there was also, you know, when you'd audition for a part, there was always that one character that you wanted to be. There was, you could have been cast as anyone, but you were like, but I really want to be this one. And I feel like I really enjoy when that happens to people. And I feel like that's what happened with Eddie in this case. And no pun intended, because I was talking about a suitcase. I just think that's a nice little touch that he brought his own, as the article says, the Eddie case.
Well, so the last point I had on here was, who else might we have cast for Newt? And I went and found a couple old MuggleNet articles from before we knew who was going to be Newt. So, the first one's from, 2013.
Ooh.
So, and then the second one's from 2014. Let's see. Let's look at the older list first. So this is by, I don't know who wrote this article. It just says posted by MuggleNet. But if you I'm sure if you search casting Newt Scamander, that's the name of the article. You can find it. So on here we have Ben Whishaw. Is that how you pronounce it?
I think so. Yeah.
He was Q in Skyfall. Tom Hughes, Luke Treadaway.
Oh my gosh. Sorry. I did it. Okay. I love Luke and Harry Treadaway, so I didn't even once consider either of them for the part, but now I'm like, that's interesting. Okay, I'm sorry. For whatever reason, I immediately pictured as Newt Richard Ayoade, and that was just that was who I wanted and needed to be Newt, and I don't know. I don't know where it came from. I may have seen it online before I thought of it first, but I was just attack the block. And I just think that would have been an interesting,
Well, you brought up Richard Ayoade, and I remember on Tumblr, I don't know who first came up with it, but it became a big push for Nathan Stewart Jarrett, I think is his name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, from Misfits. Yes.
Unless I have another article from last year on MuggleNet that's in support of a Newt of color, diversity in the wizarding world. Because Tumblr, you know, I'm from Tumblr. That's my hometown. And so Tumblr's very much into diversity because that's important.
Yes.
And obviously Eddie Redmayne is white. And Newt Scamander was never said to be, his skin color was never stated because there was no narrative about him. So why would that be brought up? But I figured we could touch on that because it is Black History Month.
I remember seeing all the different fan castings, like you said, on Tumblr. And I'm one of those. I'll be on Tumblr or Reddit. It doesn't matter. I don't pick just one. But I guess when I was thinking Richard Ayoade, I wasn't necessarily thinking, like I said, I just saw it and I was like, this is right. Like, this is what I want. This is correct.
He's a very awkward, nerdy guy.
Yeah, he's just, he, And his comedic timing is just amazing. And I was like, you know, maybe
now I can't stop thinking
could be
about
funny.
Richard Ayoade.
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of IT Crowd lately. But yes. Yeah, Nathan Stewart Jarrett. I remember seeing all of the different, you know, how people do the posts. I liked him because I liked him in Misfits. And mm-hmm. I think
which
it,
is
it
not
could have been
a character like Newt at all.
Oh no. Oh no. They're not in Misfits at all. No one is.
Misfits is a
totally
whole different,
different.
Brand.
Yeah. So I really would have liked to see some diversity. Not that mm-hmm. I'm sitting here hating on Eddie Redmayne at all, because I really love him.
Yeah.
But if they had chosen to take that route, I still feel it could have gone well, mm-hmm. especially for that time period. And if they had chosen to keep the rest of the cast as it is now, then we would have had an interracial relationship, you know, in the 1920s. And that could have been something interesting to explore. And mm-hmm. it's just like there's so many possibilities that I do feel they're missing out on a bit. But at the same time, we don't really know what to expect from the movie anyway, so.
In the list that MuggleNet had in 2014, the last person they had on the list was Freema Agyeman. And, I mean, obviously, like, we knew Newt was a boy, but
yeah.
how awesome would a girl Newt have been?
I really do love her. She's great.
Yeah, she's great.
I really like the idea of having a Newt of color. The thing that I would worry about that is they're trying to do this a very political storyline dealing with nomadges and like the Second Settlers and all this stuff. And if you had, for example, an interracial relationship in the 1920s, you would have to address that in context
it would have
too.
To be acknowledged.
And and as cool as it would be to examine that relationship and everything, I feel like it would be like a lot of stuff to go through. It'd be like super distracting, unfortunately. And it's like I would love to have that, but then you'd have so much stuff going on, you might lose your audience a little bit. But I do hope that the Fantastic Beasts in general is not as whitewashed to say it, you know, as Harry Potter was, because I mean there have been a lot of articles recently about like the recasting of Lavender Brown and how Dean played a really big role in the seventh book, but was only really in part two in the movies, and it's like as much as I'm confident that it's not intentional, it is very apparent that there's not a lot of diversity in the Harry Potter universe or movie universe so far. So it would be nice to have that change.
Yep. Well, for today's Time Turner segment, we're kind of going on the same vein because I figured it is Black History Month. So I thought for today we could talk about the Harlem Renaissance, which is obviously going on in the 20s. Also, just like quick disclaimer that everyone on the show right now is white. So, like, if we do say something wrong, point it out. I don't know what we could possibly say, but
we are not trying to be problematic.
Yeah. So, the Harlem Renaissance was about from 1918 to the mid-1930s. It was this big movement, literature, art, intellectual movement, rebirth of African American arts, and it was all centered in Harlem, New York, kind of after the Great Migration from the South, after the Civil War, because it sucked in the South, obviously. It's a lot of it's associated with like jazz music. And so obviously Fantastic Beasts takes place in New York, but there are like no black people in Fantastic Beasts. So I doubt that the Harlem Renaissance will really come up, but it could, either in this movie or a later movie, and I think that would be cool. What do you guys think?
I hope so, because just music alone is incredible mm-hmm. at this time. You've got Louis Armstrong, you got Billie Holiday, you got Duke Ellington and his orchestra. I mean, Duke Ellington's orchestra starts like around 1923, I think, and so by 1926, 27, like it's a huge jazz and blues is a huge influence on the music scene of America at that time. Like, I would love, like, I mean, that's kind of how we define 1920s music, is that jazz feeling. And it's like that, you know, Duke Ellington especially is like one of the main reasons why we have that association. It's like, I want that. I want to hear that. I want to see that. I want to see Duke Ellington in the movie. I love it. That's what I want.
We've even got the jazz intro and outro of our own podcast, so yeah. Obviously it's important.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think this would be really cool to show up. Probably not in this movie, but in a later movie. I assume that the movies will keep taking place in New York, but maybe they won't. I don't know.
Yeah, we just really have like no idea. Should. Oh, I can't think of his name right now. He played Hellboy. Ron Perlman. There we go.
Yes.
He's playing a goblin gangster.
That's true.
At a speakeasy, right?
Yeah.
So I assume at the speakeasy there might be jazz music?
Yeah. I think that jazz music is the easiest way that they can incorporate the Harlem Renaissance into Speak Beastie without having a whole separate thing and having it take away from anything.
Into Speak Beastie.
Because it's everywhere. Sorry, Speak Beastie. Yeah, that's what I meant. I meant into our podcast. Into Fantastic Beasts. Nailing it. I think they kind of have to go that route if they are going to include it, which they absolutely should. Because if you're looking at like poets and authors, I mean, you've got like Langston Hughes, I think, is 1920s. And it's harder to incorporate an author or a poet because their medium is not as, you know, flashy. It's not as apparent as music, you know. So it would be harder to make that little change there. All right. So for this week's Newt case, we have what I think is a hilarious beast called the Hoop Snake. It's a myth of the American frontier, as well as it's perfect for us. It's so silly. It's just the silliest. It's a myth of the American frontier, as well as Canada, Australia. There's anywhere where there are snakes, there's generally a myth about this snake. It's also mentioned most famously in the Pecos Bill stories, as well as Fearsome Critters by Henry H. Tryon and The Hodag and Other Tales of Logging Camps by Lakeshore Kearney. Both awesome books you should check out. The Hoop Snake is a snake. Yep.
That clarification, because I was
shocker,
lost.
Shocker, I know.
Slow down, but take it back, it's a what?
Its defining feature is that it grasps its tail in its jaws, and it rolls after its prey like a wheel, which just, I really hope that this shows up in Fantastic Beasts just to see Newt running after or running away from a snake rolling on its side. That sounds so funny. Supposedly, in some myths, it at the last second, it stretches out and it will stab the victim with its venomous tail. But, I mean, less funny, but it's very, the rest of it is so funny.
I don't know, that still looks just really funny in my head.
I'm imagining like the Benny Hill music and the snake just like rolling around. But yeah, there are similar legends to this all over the world. Like there's the Ouroboros in Greek mythology and the Tsuchinoko in Japan. It's a very common myth, and I think it's just too funny not to include. I just hope it's there.
I'm seeing like a Scooby-Doo scene. He's running away.
Like the door gag where they're like running through the doors in the hallway and there's like a snake rolling around.
Jazz music in the background. Oh my gosh. And then they like slam a door on it and it like does that little cartoonish jumpy thing. I don't know what I'm saying.
That's the technical term.
Yeah. I'm a film student.
And I'm an English major. We can't do the things we set out to do.
is there any beast in Fantastic Beasts similar to this? I don't think so. But then I was like, a basilisk. And I was like, just a basilisk in a hoop. This giant snake.
That would be terrifying.
That would be scary. That's not as funny anymore. But
I would cry. I might cry just thinking about it. So thank you. He finally gives us something that's really not that scary, and you make it terrifying, so thanks. Well,
I had nothing to do with that. I tried. If someone could make, like, a gif of, like, a hoop snake rolling, just like a continuous loop.
Yes.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Hoop loop.
That would be so good.
Oh. I just googled hoop snake, and it is a little bit more terrifying when you see an image.
Okay, thank you for that warning. Thank you.
At least an image that looks like a real snake. The cartoonish image of a hoop snake rolling down a hill following a man, that's still funny, but it's another one where this kid's hat has blown off and the hat looks like a UFO in the sky, so aliens, just saying.
What? You got that from the hoop snake Google?
Listen, it's this specific image. The kid's hat looks like a UFO.
But, like,
it does.
Intentionally?
I don't know if intentionally.
Okay.
Probably not.
Someone just sucks at drawing hats.
Yeah.
What if they listen to the show and they're like, I worked really hard on that. I was like,
this person from newcryptozoology.wikia.com.
What?
Anyway. We're gonna finish the show.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
So that's it for this episode. Be sure to send us your news, theories, comments, questions, anything really, anything at all. We appreciate all of it. And thank you, Sophie, for joining us for this episode.
It's been a pleasure. It's been fantastic. Oh yeah. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie. Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com, or you can leave us an audioboom at audioboom.com/channel/speakbeastie. And we are now on Patreon, so make sure to check it out and sponsor us if you want to. And don't forget to subscribe on iTunes and leave us a review, please.
You're so nice. We're just not nice at all.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Give us your money and leave us reviews.
Please. Oh, oh dear. I'm too British to say please and thank you.
Don't worry about it, Sophie. Yeah. It was great.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Sophie. Case closed.
Okay. God. I'm just gonna punch myself and quit.
I just want, like, after like 10 episodes to have, like, just a podcast that's, like, a bonus episode that's just called Aerial Sounds. And it's just, like, all the sounds, all the random things that you say. Like, it's great.
Let's
really
remix
good.
It.
Oh my gosh.
Let's make a K-pop song out of it.
Oh no. You got the giggles. Okay. Yeah, I'm doing it. Okay. Yeah, I'm doing it. Sasquatch. Let's go. Yeah, I... Oh my... Oh, whoa, okay. Yeah, I... Oh my... Oh, whoa, okay. Start it over. Yeah, I... Oh my... Oh, whoa, okay. Okay, hey, wait.
This is so going on the aerial sounds.
Coming to a store near you.